Hello, everybody. Hello, masters of your own destiny. What's going on? Welcome back here. Yes, I'm in the basement. I'm in my place, my happy place, but let's put it that way, because it's from here, from the basement of my house, that I have conversations with those experts in the communication, media, and the arts. If you would ask me, I don't know, maybe 3 years ago, that the podcast will be growing the way it has been growing, and I will have conversations like our guest today, I would probably say, I don't know if that will happen. Well, it's happening. It's all about putting the love, the care, the hard work, and definitely to be perseverant, right? To keep going, even in times where you doubt that things can actually happen. For example, our guest today is amazing expert in production design. He's the production designer of one of my new favorite TV shows in Netflix called Avatar, The Last Airbender. Michael Wiley is in the basement. I cannot wait to start a conversation with him, of course, not only about the show Avatar, The Last Airbender, but about his career in general. I mean, Michael has been involved in movies, production design of movies such as Men in Black, I mean, you name it, other TV shows. I cannot wait to have this conversation. But before we go there, I think the right thing to do is to say thank you to our partners. It's thanks to that partnership with WCNY PBS in Central New York and Central New York Arts that we can come to you every other week. So thank you so much for the support. If you are new, don't worry. Welcome to the family. I hope you stay with us. You can connect with us through all social media, Netflix. I'm talking about Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, you name it. We are everywhere. And of course, you can visit fsbasement.com, which is our home. You can get there all the past episodes in audio and in video of the show. Great guests. So just go there, fsbasement.com, and you're going to be able to find that. Plus amazing educational tools that we have created for you in order to educate yourself more about the business of communication, media, and the arts. Let's start this new episode from Suarez Basement with Michael Wiley right away. Thank you for the company. Here we go. Michael, I want to welcome you to my basement. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
What do you think about my production design?
It's very good. It's very realistic.
It's very realistic. Yeah. I try. You know, the basement doesn't look very good, so I put some touches to make it look a little better.
You did very well, sir.
Michael, listen, of course, I'm always fascinated with everything that have to do with visual storytelling. That's the whole point of this podcast. It's an educational podcast for students who are coming into the field, right? So you have been working in production design for quite a while, from Men in Black 2, right? The movie. And now you are working in one of my favorite TV shows, Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Yes.
How the industry has changed, because again, you were working in movies, now we are working in television. I guess my question is, in your experience, how the industry has changed for you as a production designer? What new opportunities are out there?
Well, first of all, not to be too specific, but I started out a long time before that doing regular production. I was like a prop guy. I was an art department assistant. And then I started designing commercials for a long time. And that was really where I learned how to do that. That's where I really learned how to do this. Like, you know, every kind of 2 weeks we were doing a different, you know, different everything. So it was really good training. It's very much like doing a soap opera or something. You have to, you know, you really have to do things quickly, and you can't overconsider things and all that kind of stuff. So I did do commercials for a really long time, and then got a break on a TV show that the pilot of which had been directed by Barry Sonnenfeld, and that's how I got in the whole Men in Black kind of world. But the way things have changed now is there's a lot more people involved. There's a lot more money involved, And the technology has really gone crazy. You know, like back, I hate to sound like somebody's dad, but like back when we were doing this, you know, we were hand drawing sets and we were taking pictures of things and going and having the pictures developed. And it was there was a really long lag of between what we did then and what we do now. In fact, when I got that first TV job with, and Barry Sonnenfeld was the executive producer, he insisted that I get an email address because I didn't have an email address then. So that, like, we were still stopping at phone booths and calling people from pagers. So it was things have changed a lot. There was you didn't have instant access to people. You didn't have instant anything. If you wanted a representation of what you thought you were going to do, somebody had to draw it and then take a picture of it. And maybe, you know, and I don't remember how people like in New York, for example, could see what we were doing, but that's when email first started. So things have changed a lot. Everything now is instant and you can be on a Zoom meeting and have somebody typing in things, what we think they're going to look like. And have 19 producers say, no, that's not what I was thinking. And then go through all 19 of the versions that they were thinking. So it's very fast now. And it's very, I would have to say, impersonal. It's really, really impersonal.
And okay, you talk about technology, because I think that for me is a fascinating aspect. I'm a kind of a nostalgic of the old way to do things. Meaning, you know, when we used to watch movies like Men in Black, or funny enough, I watched Titanic. I don't know how many times I watched that movie, but I just watched it this past weekend. And I was thinking, wow, like, you know, the effort to do things for real. I mean, you know, that water was real water and that setting was a real setting. And now with all the new technology, it's hard to distinguish what is really made by hand and what is really made by a computer.
Yep.
How had that affect your work? I'm making it easier. Do you feel more tend to do things manually?
There's things that are really nice about the new technology where you don't have to, like, not everything has to be such a big dramatic exercise in futility all the time. I was just thinking when we were talking about the Men in Black 2 movie, like there's a scene where the guys get sucked in underground in Times Square, and then they end up in this thing that looks like a toilet, and then they end up going down a drain. Well, they built that entire giant toilet and filled it with water and had stunt guys going down the drain of this giant set piece. None of this would be done now. And so I think things used to look more real when we built more of it. We just finished Avatar, you know, and The Last Airbender. And, you know, we use this volume technology, this virtual technology that they use on like The Mandalorian and stuff like that. And, you know, on one day we could be in the South Pole on an ice sheet. And 2 days later, you could be in, you know, India at the top of the mountain. So it was, it's really impressive. But to me, I think it still looks like a video game in a lot of ways. I feel like we're living in a video game. And I quite miss the tactile and kind of real quality of things. And I also am not quite sure that every show and everything needs to be, as you know, whiz bang spectacular. And I think that, you know, with these changes that are coming from in the post-strike world where the budgets are going down and all that, we might luckily get back into a lot more visual storytelling and words and, you know, not quite so many fireworks, hopefully. And then the great thing about that will be that the fireworks that we do get to see can be that much more thoughtful and well done and all that kind of stuff that time allows you.
And you you mentioned, of course, Avatar, The Last Airbender, which I'm fascinated with the show. You know, it's hard sometimes to distinguish what's real and what isn't real, right? It's a show exactly what you say. This is about the fireworks and the visual beauty of these places. How much is, I guess, if we can get a percent, it's not like we need to be exact, but how much is real and how much is not real?
Well, it's hard to say because what took that show so long to come out, we finished in September of 22 and it just came out at the time of this recording, you know, a month and a half ago. So they had to go in and do a lot more visual effects over what we did. So the interesting answer is that I don't know most of the time what, but we did build, because of the way the show was shot and because of how many sets there were per episode, we did have to go and build a lot of real sets. So they're like in the first couple of episodes, there's a big, what looks like a Japanese village called Kiyoshi Village. That was all built in a active gravel pit in British Columbia. And we built all the roads. We built all of the buildings. We built a river that ran through the middle of it. The Greens people cut down 40-foot tall pine trees and buried them in the ground next to the building so that everything looked like it had been there for quite a long time. So there was still a lot of that kind of old-fashioned TV making. A lot of it was really, really high technology and major visual effects, and also incredible amounts of stunts that was a lot of rigging, and there was a lot that went on behind the scenes for a lot of the battles and things like that. So percentage wise, I think we probably built 25% of the show, and probably the rest was a combination of virtual technology and visual effects.
So this is a question. If, and I want you to it's a two-part question. One is, let's define what a production designer is, based on what I understand is the person who take care of everything that is going to be in front of the camera, right? How it's going to be perceived. If that is the case, how much is your involvement in the actual no real stuff, meaning in the actual computer animated stuff? Do you still have control over the concept?
Well, control is a very interesting word. but the way that it was meant to work was that for a lot of these environments that were being created in virtual production, what we did was a ton of visual research. We sent them millions of pictures of what we thought things looked like, and textures and insets of textures and all kinds of stuff, so that these real Unreal engines could make these images. And then what was supposed to happen was that, first of all, the time between when the sets were designed by us, sent to artists all over the world to get made into these Unreal images, was 6 months. So we would send them away and not see anything again for probably 4 or 5 months, where we were allowed to then give notes. And then the artists were able to make changes, and then the thing would get delivered to the stage. Somewhere along those 4 or 5 months, visual effects more or less took over, and they were in charge of the vendors. They were in charge of the artists. They were in charge of. So what we learned was that we had to give them a very concise idea of what this environment needed to look like. And then you cross your fingers, and when it comes back, it's like an unboxing video. You kind of get to see what they came up with. And so the original idea, the original concept was the art department, and the final product was not. And then there's another layer that, again, when I say that it, the reason that it took so long was then there was another visual effects layer over that virtual layer, which is what took so long. And that's a whole nother set of artists. And I wasn't even on payroll for that part. So you start to get the picture of how much influence I do not have over what some of this stuff looks like. But the good news is that a lot of people, visual effects producers and visual effects supervisors and the like are really starting to get interested in the idea of the art department of the original show staying on a bit longer to have a little bit more influence about what the show looks like. So there's an evolution happening. I don't know how long that'll take, but it's definitely happening.
And tell me a little bit about, again, what do you consider a production designer is in a very simple, almost like if we open the dictionary and we say, okay, let's look for production designer, how you will define that? And also, how do you start in this business? Meaning, I hear the advertising, all this stuff, but where you were a kid, where you are very much playing to create universe and words and things like that.
Well, the first question is that I think for me, what a production designer is, there's a very large technical aspect to this. But in my opinion, and in the way I approach it, is that I am a writer sitting in the back of the writing room, creating background stories that no one will ever read, but that I can use visually to help tell the character's story. And to make this, whatever the project is, a television show or a movie or anything, look like what it is. I know that sounds very vague, but in a lot of my work, the designers that I really admire are the ones who, when you see the film, you know who did it, mm-hmm. but not because they've impose some kind of look onto the thing. It's you can tell with a painter that somebody's hand has been involved in this thing. And those are the guys that I really admire. And I think that I have a similar vibe in which I have a bit of a sense of humor. I like to imbue a sense of humor into things, even when they're not meant to be necessarily meant to be there. But I also like trickery. I like lying to people about what they're seeing. I like to keep people on their toes. But more than anything, I have this theory that I don't think anybody turns on their television or however they get their shows. I don't think anybody turns that thing on to see what you can see by looking out your own window. I think people want things to be more beautiful than they are in real life. I think people want things to be more scary than they are in real life. I think people want to be lied to about how great or bad the world is. So that's what I do as a production designer. And what I really am interested in is backstory. And I'm very interested to make sure that the whole thing looks like the thing and that people aren't watching seven different TV shows because they all look different or because there's not a through line or because, you know, mm-hmm. just like you would do with the character, you want a character to, you know, behave in a certain way or like do a certain thing. I want the show to do that. So that's my interpretation of it. I think I differ from a lot of people in that think that they're in charge of the visual, you know, just the visual aspect of the show. And I think it's much deeper than that. And it's much more psychological than that. And that's where I land.
I always say to my students, and I know, I mean, the audience must be quite tired to listen to me saying this, but one of the things I say to my students at the beginning of the semester is that you are in the business of make-believe, right? That is your main goal. As a visual storytelling, your goal is to make me believe that what I'm seeing is real. In the moment that I don't see it real, I'm out. I'm going to change to a different show. And I think production design is, for me, one of those very, very important piece of the puzzle to make that movie. It's funny because I'm watching Avatar, The Last Airbender, but I'm watching another show also kind of similar. I'm not going to mention the show, where the visual effects, the ambient, is so poor that in some point I say, okay, this doesn't make sense for me to keep watching this because I don't believe it.
Yeah. There's a, I don't get involved in very many of them, thank God, but there is a brand of producer out there and a studio who think that things should look real so that people can relate to them. They call it being relatable. And listen, if you hire me, I'll do whatever you want. I'm not going to fight with you, but like, I don't think that's why people watch TV shows. And so there's a lot of fantasy shows that are out there where, you know, where people have like a special power, and studio people think that, and a lot of directors think that in order for the special power to have impact, it needs to be utilized against a background that we can relate to, or a background that's mundane, so that it stands out. Like, no, you have to create a world in which those things are possible. And by making a world where those things are possible, a viewer sitting at home in, you know, Flint, Michigan would not necessarily relate to it in any way. Mm. I did a show a long time ago called Pushing Daisies, and we got these scripts, and my very first thought was like, there's a lot going on here that doesn't happen in real life. So why in the world does this? This is back when it was an ABC, you know, ABC primetime TV show, and the studio people at ABC and at Warner Brothers were like, no, no, it has to look completely relatable. It has to look like Desperate Housewives. It has to. And it's like, no, I think that people have to believe that what these characters are doing in the show is possible.
Right.
And this can't be possible in the world that we recognize, like at the supermarket. So that's where I'm at with how these things work. I don't think that anybody cares. If you want to see what's going on in the world, get in your car and go to the supermarket. And if you want to see what's going on at, you know, in the world of Avatar The Last Airbender, then, you know, pay your Netflix subscription and watch it there.
And Michael, you know, it's impossible to talk about production design, and I know it's like this subject that is kind of hot now, and everybody wants to talk about AI this, AI that. But it's a reality, right? I mean, it's not like I'm actually quite, I don't know if the word is scared, but I mean, the things that I'm able to see that you can accomplish with AI in this day is like crazy stuff, right? Do you think in the future, studios and of course, TV studios, Netflix, Hulu, whoever is behind the production of these great shows that we are watching, will use this tool as a way to cost efficient, meaning like I don't need to start building a whole set when I can actually create these through AI. Is that where we're going, do you think? Or what is your perception, being you in the industry?
Historically, people have run with their hair on fire thinking that the industry is ending tomorrow because something's going to change. And very few times you see things change in the way that people thought that they were going to change. And so things are going to change. You can tell a computer to do something and it does a really remarkable job of doing that thing. Running from it or being scared of it, I don't think is the reaction that we all need to have right now. Mm-hmm. But what I did learn from doing Avatar is that we had all of this crazy, expensive, unbelievable technology. And they're talking about doing season two right now, and they're not going to use any of that technology because it didn't enhance the storytelling of the show. So all this stuff exists. Somebody is going to figure out a really great way to use it. But I don't know if you remember, you know, 30 years ago, people were talking about actors being replaced by, you know, they were doing those commercials that had Marilyn Monroe with her mouth moving like a puppet. And everyone was freaked out. Every actor I knew was freaked out that they were never going to work again because they had a Marilyn puppet that could fake out being real. What we learned from Avatar in this, the last thing I worked on. So this is the last thing I've learned. The strike is killing me. But what we learned was people still want the old fashioned way of doing things. Now, a lot of people are going to do newfangled stuff. And it's going to be really great. You're going to start seeing 18-year-olds designing and filming like amazing stuff on their computers in their basement. And I think it's going to be awesome. Is it the wave of the future? Don't quote me, but I don't think anybody's, I don't think anybody's even considering replacing actors with fake actors. I don't think anybody's even considering replacing entire films with like virtual sets.
Before we go, what do you would say to all those listeners and students who want to pursue this as a career? Any advice for them? What are you looking? Let's say if you were looking for a production design assistant, what type of young individual are you looking for?
The thing that I think is most important for everybody when you're starting out, be available to do anything and have like a really good attitude about it. You'd be surprised at the stuff that you learn whilst being asked to do something that seems really mundane and dumb. And then when you finally get a chance to do the thing that you want to do, do not be afraid. Do not be afraid of making a mistake. Do not be afraid of people not liking what you're doing. That's the last thing that you should be thinking about. Get fired as many times as you can. Make friends with like really, really creative people and be as creative as you possibly can be. Because somebody will see you in the corner and say, I hire so many people that don't have the experience that they should have to work on the level of shows that I do sometimes. And I hire these people because I see interest and I see clever creativity. And most importantly, I see these young kids now have a really bad reputation of not wanting to do anything. And when you catch a kid straight out of school and you go like, listen, I know this is going to be an awful job, but will you please do the following thing? And they go like, yeah, I'll do it. Those are the people I'm looking for. And those are the people that producers are looking for when you get older and you start designing, and those who are studios are looking for to make sure that they get you and not the other person that did a show that looked remarkably similar to the one that you did, but aren't you. Be authentic. You already said it. Be authentic as you can. Tell your story the way that you think you want to tell it. And if people don't like it.
Right. That's something that I learned through this process with the podcast is that a lot of the people that interview say, you know, an artist should not do an art for somebody else. The art is for you. And if somebody else tends to like it, that's a different story. But trying to please other people with your art, whatever that art means, that craftsman of that art, is not the right way to do art, you know, to be creative. And it's a very interesting concept. I never saw it that way until I started podcast and I start conversation with people like you that are so creative. So, you know, involved in that creative process, that I realize it's true. You should not write a book for the sake of somebody else who like it or not. It's for you.
Yep.
Yeah. Michael, thank you so much. You are adorable. You are awesome. Thank you so much. This has been a fantastic conversation. I want to thank, of course, PBS, WCNY in Central New York for the partnership and Central New York Arts There are the nonprofits who allow this podcast to come to life. Michael, all the good luck in your next projects, and we will keep in touch.
Yeah, thank you so much.